brought you on the Armstrong Show with Glenn.
And Drew.
Thank you to all of our patrons for your continued support of the show. We absolutely 100% love that you guys are helping keep the show going and helping us do community service work through Stop the Bleed and good stuff like that. If you are an alumni, don't forget, just 2 days from now, October 19th, is going to be the meet and greet at Dad's Eatery in Scottsdale from 6 to 9. We're going to run, walk, crawl, hop, skip, whatever at 6. And then social hour begins at 7. We're going until 9. And everyone just encouraged to come out and meet your people. Meet people who think like you. You need to know more and more these days who these people are. We're doing this to get you guys together. You can be an alumni of any class. I don't care if you're an alumni of Stop the Bleed. Doesn't matter. That's going to be October 19th, this Wednesday. Don't forget. And if you don't run or whatever, we don't care. Come out and walk it. Have some fun. Get outside. Enjoy yourself. Meet people. Walk it. There's like a mile. You could do 2 miles. You could do 3. You could do 4. It's pretty easy to do the loops that we've got out there. We have plenty of people who are going to be walking, jogging, whatever. Don't be scared. All right? Don't be a pussy. November the 10th will be our next alumni event. That's going to be video scenarios using a TI video system with Bob Schneider. It's going to be right here at the schoolhouse. That one's going to be 6 to 8. There is a cost to that one, but it's $40. That's just to pay Bob for his time and his fuel to come out and do this for our alumni. It's going to be cognitive processing and task load processing for lethal force encounters. There will be physical elements to it, but it is mostly the video scenario system. So I'm looking forward to it. I hope you guys show up so that you can learn the same stuff I'm going to be learning, but I'm going to be having a good time. I don't know if Drew's coming or not. She's not paying attention, so who knows?
I mean, I might be there.
Wow, what a commitment.
It depends if we have our
November
kids.
The 10th, I'll fucking be here, right?
Oh, it depends if we have our kids.
Russian oil pipeline in Europe mysteriously blows up.
Shocker.
Here's my favorite part about it, right? So this is this thing, this pipeline, the Nord Stream pipeline that feeds Europe was blown up recently. And this is really crazy because America blames Russia for blowing up their own pipeline, right? European Union has been sanctioning Russian oil all year and has actually forbid member countries from buying Russian oil, right? And this is nuts because Russia actually controls the valve and could just fucking turn it off if they wanted to. But here's the best part. Whichever country blew it up, based on how it was exploded, okay, whichever country blew it up has probably got an elite underwater special operations team capable of transporting a lot of explosives deep underwater to a pipeline location. I mean, I don't fucking know who that could be. But following the pipeline explosion, Germany stated – It was in secret talks with Russia to lift the sanctions and start rebuying Russian oil. Some country didn't like that. Some country with this elite underwater special operations team that fucking blows shit up underwater. I don't know, man. Pretty fucking fishy if you ask me. Oh, I wanted to update on Big Dick Munn. Okay, so I've been really enjoying a lot of conversations with listeners who have been hitting me up about how they really enjoyed – hearing our rendition of Big Dick Munn straight smoking that dude. But I was training with some law enforcement guys this last weekend or last week or whatever it was. And there's another video I saw that was released as part of kind of an internal training thing for law enforcement agencies. And I'm sure it's publicly available now. But the guy actually did not – Big Dick Munn did not actually kill him. He shot him and the dude fell and was incapacitated for the most part, but was able to still reach his handgun and kill himself. So in the end, he killed himself, but Big Dick Munn stopped him from hurting anybody else. Mm. So still Big Dick. Mm-hmm. All right. So we're talking about the Tacoma police officer shooting. I can't remember if that was last week or the week before we talked about it. But anyway, now you guys know the rest of the story, Paul Harvey's rest of the story. If you didn't keep up with what was happening with PayPal, it's really, really important to do so. And here's why. It shows the power that we, the people, actually have. PayPal revised their terms of service to issue $2,500 fines to users who had posted misinformation anywhere on the internet. They claim they accidentally updated their terms of service to find users who post misinformation. They then, realized their accident after a massive public uproar of people going like, who the fuck do you think you are? You're going to find people just for posting whatever you deem to be misinformation on the internet? PayPal sucks and it still sucks. And it sucked ever since they really came out and said, we're not going to do gun part transactions, and they were really cutting down all that kind of stuff. It sucks. I avoid at all costs, I avoid using PayPal. And so should you. This is how people make a difference.
Yeah.
They had this huge public uproar. PayPal then reverses the whole thing and says, hey, whoops, I'm sorry. It was an accident, which is always like everyone's favorite way. Instead of just going like, yeah, you know what? You're right. We're wrong. We shouldn't have done that. Instead of owning it like big kids, they're like little bratty bitch-ass children raised by a single fucking mom who has two jobs and never sees her kids. That's how they fucking respond. Oh, it was an accident. Really? Really? You fucking spilled all the milk all over the kitchen because you were upset and throwing a tantrum. But it was an accident. Listen, PayPal, you fucking tantrum throwing bitches. You don't get to fucking do this kind of shit anymore because people are going to have a huge uproar.
Yeah.
Kudos to all the single moms out there working two jobs, by the way. But your kids suck. I'm sorry. That's just the way it fucking goes.
So I just saw something on the news from Fox News that says American researchers claim they've developed a deadlier COVID strain in the lab.
Yeah, yeah. It like kills 80% of people it comes in contact with.
This variant has an 80% kill rate. So you know what they're going to do? They're going to launch it into the world.
Well, like, let's go. Let's do it. I'm in.
Like, why would you even why would you even fuck around with that?
Because they're always fucking around with that shit in the labs. And if people knew what the CDC was up to, they'd blow their fucking mind. Those people are, like, just constantly creating horrible, god-awful shit.
Yeah. I don't.
Whatever, man.
Whatever. I mean, I guess there's that. I mean, isn't that how the virus got spread in the fucking first place? Was it because it was created in a lab and then leaked?
Yeah, pretty much.
So.
One of my favorite news stories. I always love these news stories. I love news stories about gun buybacks. Gun buybacks have got to be the most useless, most wasteful, most passive-aggressive fucking thing that the gun control people can do, where they launch these buybacks into communities. They go in and say, hey, you economically downtrodden poor people. They're literally buying guns from poor people because nobody else is going to sell their fucking guns for nothing, right, which is basically what they give you. And so, you know, a bunch of people come out of the freaking woodwork and they're like, oh, here's this gun. And no questions are asked. I'm like, what a great way to get rid of like a murder weapon or something. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like you're like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, give me $500 for this, idiots. But anyway, so they do these gun buybacks. They always claim how successful they are. And they claim the success by how much taxpayer money they give away. That's how they claim success. So there's always someone who comes up with some crazy shit. I saw one not too long ago where a guy basically took like wooden 2x4s and he put like pipes on them. And then he made actual functioning like lever triggers on the side that activated it was like a fucking duplex nail that would basically act as a firing pin. And it worked. I mean, I wouldn't want to hold on to it for more than one fucking shot. But look, booby traps are made with less, right? And so he made these quote-unquote functional firearms, and he went to this stupid fucking buyback, and they were giving him like, you know, several hundred dollars a piece for these things, and he only made however many he made, but he still walked away with a few $1,000. Well, this guy in New York, he fucking takes the cake. This is the guy, this is the stuff the heroes are made out of, okay? Man 3D prints guns for New York buyback event. Makes $21,000.
I would totally do that.
21 grand. So basically, here's what happened. For Christmas, he gets a 3D printer. His name is quote unquote Kem. All right. So he gets this 3D printer for Christmas. It's like a $200 printer. Like it's not an expensive piece of equipment. And he starts printing these receivers. There's a picture of them. And they're just, they look like fucking toys, right? But he said it all ended with the guy and a lady from the budget office finally coming around with 42 gift cards and counting them in front of me, $21,000 in $500 gift cards.
Oh, my gosh.
WKTV contacted the state attorney general's office about 3D printed firearms, though there was no response to that question besides it was all a quote-unquote big success and the program in general keeps New York family safe. So giving this freaking guy $21,000 for his shit fucking print. First of all, this guy
is a legend.
Awesome, right? He deserves it. Okay, take it. Take money
that
from this.
That is capitalism at its finest.
Beautiful. Hey, here's the thing. I love how, you know, and when someone's trying to quote someone, they would say like said Joe or commented Joe, replied Bob. They actually say laughed Kem here, right? I'm going to read the whole thing. I'm sure handing over $21,000 in gift cards to some punk kid after getting a bunch of plastic junk was a rousing success, laughed Kem. What a great fucking quote. Asked where he got the idea, he told a local media outlet he saw people on Twitter talking about using 3D printers to make big bucks by printing guns for buyback programs. Perhaps he was referring to the story of the man who recently turned in 62 3D printing guns to Houston's buyback program and collected $3,100. Ha! What a waste! $21,000. Look at Kem!
Killing it.
Whatever your fucking real name is, you're a legend in my heart. Keep it up, buddy. Keep showing them how stupid that bullshit is. Redwire gear moment for this week. All of your people need to know where your emergency gear is. Let your people know where your stuff's at. If people don't know that you're carrying a med kit, they can't use it on you. If people don't know that you keep a shovel and, you know, rescue straps and extra fluids and whatever in your car, they can't use them. You know, if people don't know that you have extra supplies or that you have emergency gear, they can't use them. Obviously, you don't have to let everyone in the world know, but people need to know and they need to know how to use it. Do you keep a gun on your hip? In a holster or in appendix, whatever, people around you should know how to draw that out of that holster while it's attached to your body and get to fucking work with it. All right. I know you're all badass body slaying, fucking soul snatching demons. All right. But check this out. If by some odd chance I get straight up fucking bushwhacked and I'm bleeding out on the ground and my kid is the only one standing there, I need them to be able to draw my pistol and fucking kill somebody with it. Not be searching for it, not trying to figure out how to use it, not wondering if there's a XYZ safety or whatever. They need to know how to draw dad's gun or mom's gun and freaking get to work with it. They need to know where my ankle kit is. They need to know how to access the tools in my truck. Your people need to know where your stuff is. You keep it a secret. No one can use it to help you. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Redwire Gear Moment brought to you by redwiregear.com. Update on John. He sent me a photo of burning, what was it, 100 and something thousand rounds of 7.62 by 54R?
It was more than that, yeah. Wasn't it? Wasn't it like 200,000?
I can't remember. It was way too fucking many. So just more, you know, disposal of ammunition we could use here at home, but whatever. Thanks, government. Our topic for this week, selecting optics for shooting and observation. So part of the reason we chose this topic was some questions we've been getting not just from listeners, but also from students a lot lately. And also just because Drew and I have been doing – I've been doing a lot of rifle training lately. And Drew and I were able to take a rifle class, which we'll talk a little bit about later. But we were able to take a rifle class together. And just looking at different observation optics. In fact, literally today I was teaching a private class and talking about this exact topic. So I want to talk about – what you want to start with first. So the first thing to look for when you're looking for an optic, and this is no bullshit, what's your budget? Yes. I can't have a discussion with anyone else about anything else when it comes to optics until someone tells me what their budget is. Because an expensive optic, the word expensive is different to everybody. I grew up hunting with, I don't know if we had a scope that was worth $200.
Yeah.
You know, and we killed everything we saw through that glass, but we probably could have done a lot more work. You know, I remember when our oldest son, Garrett, who's been on the show before, when we were at his deer hunt, I think I've told the story on the show before, but he had a deer hunt a few years ago where he killed this coos deer like 640 yards. And my father luckily was able to be there for that hunt and see it all happen. And he was just like, my dad watched it through my 85 millimeter fucking spotting scope as I'm ranging him through my range finding binoculars, and Garrett's looking at him through, you know, high end freaking razor quality Vortex glass, and we're calling in, you know, the external atmospheric conditions right now with a handheld Bluetooth weather station. You know what I mean? The updates our shooting solution, and I'm able to give a perfect firing solution to Garrett, and he makes a beautiful fucking one shot, one kill, dead as a doornail when that bullet hit that deer kind of shot. And I remember Dad was like, oh my God. Back when I was a guide, because that used to be our family business for so long, he's like, we never would have let someone take a shot like that. And it's not even for the reasons you would think. It's because there's no way we could have fucking seen a deer on a mountainside 640 yards away, clear enough, and had all this weather station shit. He's like, and this isn't even a lot of stuff. I mean, I had my simple hunting tripod, simple spotting shield. Like, I had simple stuff with me, really, but today's idea of that is something entirely different. My point to this being that when someone says, okay, well, what does all that cost? What is expensive to you? And that's always the first question I ask when someone goes, hey, I need a recommendation on a scope. I need a recommendation on a spotting scope. I need a recommendation on binoculars. No problem. What's your budget? Because if you're going to tell me $2,000 on, you know, a piece of glass, okay, we can talk about, you know, some mid to high medium glass. Maybe you tell me $200, okay. Now we're talking about an entirely different fucking ballgame.
Yeah.
You know, so now we're talking about entirely different types of optics, entirely different spotting scopes, entirely different whatever. So first things first, you literally have to sit down and figure out what's your budget. And whether it's a set of binos, whether it's a spotting scope, whether it's a rifle scope, whatever it is, you have to figure out what am I truly willing to spend on this. And then also consider that I can always take this piece of glass, I mean a good piece of glass, an observation piece of glass, let's say binos or a spotting scope or a monocular, are pretty much good forever. Mm-hmm. A rifle scope can always be put on another rifle, you know, so spend more money on the glass. Spend as much money as you can on glass. And I don't care if that is $200. If you're on a tight budget and you're like, I literally only have $200 to spend, well, then that's what you fucking have. Let's figure out how to get you the most for that. But figure out the exact like maximum that you can truly spend. You know, how can I stretch this budget? If I saved for a couple more months, or, you know, I put a little on a credit card or whatever it takes for you to put more money, sell some shit you don't fucking need to put more money into glass. I mean, I think that's one thing, you know, Drew's been privileged in her time, you know, working with us and being with me to have looked through some pretty amazing glass. Mm-hmm. And it makes all the difference in the world, especially for someone who has eyesight issues. You know, Drew wears glasses.
Yeah, that's what I was going to talk about. Well, not only – well, yes, but the reason I have 20/20 vision, the problem is I have a focusing problem. Mm. I have astigmatism, which just going down the rabbit hole of going through and looking through all the optics, I have been very privileged to look through some really good glass, very expensive glass. And I just in the last couple years of me getting into precision, I would say within the last 2 years, really, I've been getting into precision rifle, the last year especially. Mm. I've gotten really heavy into the, I mean, I did my first match and everything else. And what I've noticed just from taking the precision rifle and using different guns and different optics, now that I have my own, I was able to really know exactly what kind of optic I wanted. And I knew I didn't want an illumination reticle. That was a big no-go for me because my eyes can't adjust properly. I can't see my target behind it or through it, where I just have in my current one, I have a Christmas tree, but it's a little black dot. And so it's easier for me to see the black dot. I can focus in on the black dot on the target and still kind of see both at the same time. When the reticle is in the middle and it's lit up with red, it just blooms and it just blooms into this big red blob and I can't see anything. So it was harder for me to have magnification with a blooming dot because then it just made everything enhanced and worse. And it was me battling the optic and basically guessing where I'm shooting my target because I had no idea because I couldn't see it past this big red blob. But we did find out, I think a student even mentioned it to us, that a green reticle actually helps with stigmatism. So we changed out my red dot on my AR and it's now a green dot. Mm. which is pretty nifty. So if anybody does have astigmatism, start looking at – I know there's not a whole lot of green options out there because it's something that's
There's enough, though.
And developing.
I mean, green dots have been around long enough that you've got Trigicon, Aimpoint, Vortex, Hall of Sun. Did I say Aimpoint?
Mm-hmm.
Aimpoint, yeah, for sure.
But they're only in limited series, though.
But, you'll have, like – a couple of options with green.
Yeah, so it's a very limited series. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's newly developing.
And you'll usually find green dots more from, like, the Holosun type companies than you will from, like, EOTech, Aimpoint, you know, Trigicon, Vortex. They'll usually have, like, one or two that are green.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, like, a lot of the Chinese type companies, if you're talking about dots, a lot of the Chinese type companies will have that kind of stuff.
So, I mean, that was a big... eye-opener for me because it allows me to not be able to wear my glasses when I am shooting precision rifle, which you never want to do glass on glass on glass, especially when they're prescription glass looking through really nice glass and or even sunglasses. And so just trying to work my way through all these different types of reticles and really understanding that there might be a special term for the reticle that I have, but it's a little black dot and I love it. And it's really easy for me to focus on my little black dot.
You've got what's called a target dot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And your rifle scope.
Yeah. I don't like anything else that's more – it's overwhelming to me, to my eye. It's too overwhelming. I need something very small that I can pinpoint and look through it and still be able to see what's behind the little dot and knowing where I'm going to be shooting at. So that, to me, was great going through that whole – journey of looking and seeing exactly what I liked.
Well, and vision capability is really important because I remember when you took the field carbine class and I was so excited to have Drew use the new 1-10 Vortex razor.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, it's such a cool optic. I was very excited because I had the world's smallest hand in helping to develop one fucking part of that optic. And so I was like, yeah, I'm like 1/10 Blackfoot or whatever. Like, that's what I felt like. You know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to claim something that isn't fucking real. You know what I mean? And I'm like, I helped with this sort of.
I'm helping.
I was in the back like, do this. And then they were like, oh, whatever, dude. Like, someone give the guy a fucking candy bar or something, you know? And then I was like, they did it. They did the one little fucking thing. I'm famous. No, I'm not, right? But I was so excited to get this optic and have Drew use it. And I thought, man, this is really going to fill the gap that's needed. And then she ended up kind of not liking the same thing I didn't like but about the optic. It is a good optic, but it does have some problems. But it was bad because it was like this huge black
dot. No, it was
dot.
Red.
Well, it was – initially, it's black.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, well, if you're having – she's like, I can't see it. My eyes are fucking with me. It's too big. And I'm like, no problem. Just turn on the illumination. And it makes the whole thing fucking red. And she's like, oh, great. Now I can't see it and it's fuzzy as shit. Red. So, you know, eyesight consideration is absolutely something to look at here. And I want to talk about that a little bit more when I get to reticles because I want your feedback there but and also some feedback that I've gotten from other students. But outside of budget, like you really do – I'm just being totally serious here. You have got to figure out what is your ceiling and then raise it as much as you possibly can. I don't care if it's going from 500 to 550. Like raise your ceiling as much as you can and get the absolute most that you can for your optic, whether we're talking a scope on your rifle, a spotting scope, a monocular, set of binos, whatever it is. Okay. So look at budget first. All right. Get the best glass that you can get. Let me just start by giving you guys some brand recommendations because everybody wants to know. Okay. I am a Vortex fan. I'm a Vortex fan because I was using Vortex optics before we became professionally involved in them. With them, I mean. Before we became in professionally involved with them, I was already using their spotting scopes, their rifle scopes, and some of their monoculars. So I was already totally into their stuff. And then we got a professional relationship. Even better, right? So put that for where – take that for what it's worth. I am also a huge Leupold fan. I'm a fan of Burris Tactical Line. I'm a fan of some of Trigicon's stuff. Obviously, I really like Swarovski. They're very nice optics. They're very expensive, but they are very nice optics. The Bushnell Elite series is really nice for optics. I do like them. Holosun makes some really cool stuff. Who else? What's some other good optics brands. We've been trying to think of other stuff. I mean, I've used so much stuff. Right? Even Primary Arms makes some good optics. And someone right now is shitting their pants. Did you just say Primary Arms out of China? Yeah, man. They make some pretty good optics, and they're not horrible. But Burris, can't forget them. Burris makes, especially their tactical line, is really freaking awesome. I mean, there's a lot of great – Night Force, of course, for all kinds of different, you know, optics, you know, Schmidt and Bender, if you like to mortgage your house so you can get a fucking loan and buy a Schmidt and Bender, there's some options there. But like, there's a lot of great choices out there. Here's what I look for. Honestly, here's what I look for. I look for companies that are involved in the shooting sports. Part of the reason that we wanted to get professionally involved with Vortex in the beginning was this. Every competition I went to, Vortex had something on the prize table for somebody. I've been to competitions and I've seen Vortex give out optics to kids. First-time shooters, first-time competitors. I've seen Vortex, you know, sponsor all kinds of great people in this industry. They're hunters. They're shooters. All the reps that we deal with use the products. They can explain the products. They know the products. They're not just a marketing person. They're not just a salesperson. They know the Vortex stuff. Vortex as a company has a good culture within their company. Their warranty is insane. It's insane. If you have a part of a Vortex optic left after a house fire, they will send you a brand new one. I've broken a couple things. They send it right back to you. Mm-hmm. And they send you the most recent one. Recently I had to send in my rangefinder because it stopped working. And look, I beat the shit out of my stuff. This is a rangefinder that had the hell beat out of it in training and competition and everything else. And just straight up stopped working. Sent it back to them. Within a week, I had a brand new one, and it was the newest, latest, and greatest one, not the older one that I had. This has a new software, and it does some cooler stuff. Like, it matters, right? That kind of service matters. And you don't have to be the original purchaser. You don't have to have a fucking proof of purchase. Dig out some old receipt. If you have it in your hand, you're the owner. The warranty applies to you. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how important that can be if you do actually break something. I've heard people say, well, they have to have such a good warranty. Maybe all their stuff breaks a lot. No, it actually doesn't. I beat the shit out of their stuff, and I've only broken a few things. I've only seen a few of their things broken. Guess what? I've seen it all break. You put a name – I've been at this for so fucking long at this point. You tell me a name brand, I have seen it come apart.
Yeah.
I've seen it break. I've seen it crack. I've seen glass bust. I've seen turrets come loose. I've seen it all, man. Seen it all. Seen it all break. So what breaks the most? Really cheap shit. Okay? I know some of you guys are on a budget and that sucks to hear, but the stuff I see break the most is the really cheap stuff. They didn't make it super cheap without cutting some corners, all right? So the next thing we want to look at after budget and brand selection, however you want to make that, is context. What are we trying to do? So I want to break this into two different things: shooting and observation. Shooting, I'm going to talk very briefly about scopes. Observation, I'm going to talk very briefly about the three types of observation optics that I consider to be available. One, shooting, which could also be observation optics. Obviously, it's a scope. One, consider size. You don't have to go crazy on magnification. Most people overbuy magnification, so I don't need to go nuts on magnification. Also consider the physical size of the optic. What's the weight? If I'm trying to build a lightweight hunting rifle, I probably don't want a boat anchor of a scope. I probably don't need that 30 millimeter objective and that 4.5 to 27 power, you know, magnification if I've got a rifle that I'm only going to be shooting out to, you know, a few hundred yards. So consider the overall size of the optic. If it's going to have a reticle in it, do I want it to be in milliradians or MRADs or mils, or do I want it to be in minutes of angle or MOA? If I'm choosing mil or MOA, here's an easy way to make that determination. Who do you shoot with? Do they shoot in mil? Get a fucking mil scope. Don't be a dick. Do they shoot in minute of angle? Get a mil scope or get a minute of angle scope. Don't be a dick. If you want to go join the competition circuit, get a mil scope. Everybody there shoots fucking mil. If you don't really hang out with anybody and you like simple measurement in inches and stuff, or you're a traditional hunter, get a minute of angle scope. It's way easier to do that. It's way easier to do the math. It's way easier to do the corrections. There you go. Right, that's how you can break it down. I use a little bit of both, so whatever you got. Most of my stuff I would say is in mil, but that's just habits over the years. Second focal plane or first focal plane, also called rear focal plane and front focal plane if you're dealing with rifle scopes specifically. This does apply to spotting scopes, and we'll get to that in a minute. Second focal plane or first focal plane. Second focal plane reticle change does not change sizes as I magnify. First focal plane reticle changes sizes as I magnify. Upside to second focal plane. The reticle never changes sizes, so thus it is always the same size, meaning at the lower levels it's the same size and at the higher levels it's the same
size. Which I prefer.
Here's the downside of second focal plane is that you have to be on a preset magnification or do the math to convert the other possible magnification levels that are available to you. Because if you're not on that preset size of magnification, then your reticle subtensions and hash marks do not measure out to be whatever it is that they measure out to be. So there's got to be some preset. If you can't find the preset on the magnification, it's the highest power. This is really good for people who aren't going to be holding a lot. They're probably going to be, you know, hunters inside of a few hundred yards. Second focal plane is more than enough. You know, if I was a police sniper, for example, in town, I'm perfectly happy to have a second focal plane scope when the average law enforcement sniper engagement is now updated 56 yards. From 76 to 56. 56 yards? Yeah, dude, I don't need a fucking front focal plane scope. Second focal plane's gonna be more than enough. I'm not dialing for anything, all right? I'm not holding for wind. I just need something that has the same size reticle regardless of the size of magnification I'm on. Second focal plane would be perfect for that. First focal plane. When would I want first focal plane?
When you're doing longer distances.
Anytime I'm really stretching it out, I'm going to be holding. I'm going to be using, you know, my Christmas tree. I'm going to be using my wind holds. I'm going to be using my holds or different measurements inside the optic. In that case, I absolutely need a first focal plane scope because I don't need to worry about what's on the magnification ring. So I want to make sure that that's that. Downside to first focal plane. Really small magnification levels, the reticle can be very, very small, sometimes too hard to see for some people. And when zoomed in all the way, sometimes the reticle is too big. And now those lines get thicker and potentially harder to see, obscuring targets, etc. So there's anytime you get something, you give something, that's how it goes. What is the reticle and what is its context? Don't just buy a reticle, the fucking SEALs use it or whatever. Make sure that you buy a reticle that is contextual to what you're doing. As an example, 2 weeks ago or whatever it was, we're teaching a precision rifle class. I got a student go, hey, man, can you come explain my reticle to me? We just done our reticle class. We zeroed. We're doing some stuff. And he's like, hey, can you explain my reticle? I get down behind his reticle. He's got a TMR3 or what we call the Tremor 3. And I'm like, yeah, man, what do you need? And he's like, what are these? You know, he draws them out for me. What are these numbers? I'm like, oh, those are for moving targets, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 miles an hour. And he was like, when am I going to use that? And I go, do you shoot a lot of moving targets? And he's like, I don't really foresee myself shooting moving targets. And I go, well, then you have too much reticle. He's like, it's confusing. Like there's numbers below and there's these numbers above, but the numbers above don't match the numbers below and there's all these other hash marks. And I go, yeah, man, it's too much shit. Like buy a reticle that's contextual for you. If you're second focal plane, you're not holding, you're not really using subtensions or whatever, why have a Christmas tree or a H59 freaking grid system? Why have all that shit? Don't do that. Just get a basic mil dot reticle or something like that. Like keep it simple. You know, are you going to be holding and are you going to be shooting moving targets? All right. Then look for a reticle that enables you to do all that kind of stuff. You know, are half minute or half mil adjustments enough? Do you need point ones? Do you need point twos? Are you going to be measuring a lot of shit? Like what are you going to be using the scope for? Buy the reticle appropriate to that. All right. So don't over magnify. I can't say it enough. 3 to 15, 4 to 16, most of the time, plenty for everybody.
Yeah, don't zoom in all the way.
Most of the time when I'm shooting at longer ranges, I'm on 10, 12 power at the most. I need to be able to have a big field of view. I need to be able to catch whatever bullet trace I can catch through the scope. I need to be able to spot my own and correct my own misses as needed. I need to have a nice field of view so I can see stuff around it, especially whether I'm hunting or I'm looking for other possibilities, other targets, whatever. I don't want to zoom in so much and have that extreme magnification so that every tiny little minute movement I need – or I mean, is over-magnified. One of our friends, Adam Pittman, said this, and I really liked the way he described it, actually. He was helping me teach a couple weekends ago, and he said this, and I was like, what a great fucking way to describe that. He said, okay, this is what over-magnification does when you are on target. He's like, take a thing of white out, pull it out. You know, you've got – unscrew the top, pull it out. You got that little brush. He's like, now push the put the brush back in the whiteout canister. Easy, right? He's like, okay. Now – get a fucking 20 power magnifying glass and do it. And he's like, what you'll find is you will see every little minute micro movement that you make, you will be slower, it will be harder, and you'll miss way more times because you're over magnified. Mm-hmm. It's a good way to explain that. Like, you're over magnifying all the little things. If you're shooting in mirage like we do here in Arizona, forget about it. Not only is it going to be washing out your whole freaking field of view, but it's going to be doing what we call shimmering the target, and you're not actually really going to be able to determine what the left or right edge, top or bottom edges are. So don't over magnify. And the last thing is something to add into your budget is covers or cases, whether that's lens covers, whether that's some kind of protective case. I don't care if you're spending $200, $2,000 on your optic. It doesn't matter. It was good money, well spent. Buy good covers. I highly recommend things like the AAD mount scope caps. I can't recommend those things enough. I love them. AAD mount, awesome. I highly recommend things like Badlands, you know, protectors for your binos. I recommend the Coltac scope covers for your rifle scope. The Air Armor covers are fucking amazing. They're insanely amazing. They're worth the money that you'll spend when you first see one. You'll be like, what the fuck? It's worth it. They're incredible, especially if you spend a lot of money on your optics and guns and things like that. You can literally throw these things off a fucking roof and it won't even damage your equipment. They're insane. The tests the Air Armor does to their cases is insane. But let's see, what else do I like? Marsupial is a good one, Arizona brand here. Eberle Stock just released a great set of bino pouches and a spotting scope cover. Like, do invest a little bit of money to help protect your equipment. That's absolutely going to be important. All right, so that's going to be context. The last thing for rifle scopes is going to be asking, is this going to be for observation and shooting or just for shooting? Am I ever going to be spotting for somebody through this optic? Because if yes is the answer, I need a very unbusy scope, but I need a scope that's going to allow me, I need a reticle, excuse me, that's going to allow me to be able to spot and give corrections to my shooting partner. So like if Drew and I are out shooting together, I'm potentially spotting for her through my rifle scope. If I'm doing that, I need to have some grid system, Christmas tree, something in my reticle that's going to enable me to be able to make those spots and make those corrections. If I'm out shooting by myself and I'm only going to be observing myself, then I need to make sure that I have a reticle that's appropriate to that. So am I going to be observing, like if I was going to be trying to make positive ID on targets at distance, then it might be worth over magnifying my scope. I might want that 27 power optic, that 35 power optic, now that I'm looking at shit insanely far away and trying to positively identify what the hell that object is, that person is doing, that animal is up to, et cetera. Because now I'm using the optic for an observation role and not just a shooting role. If I'm only going to be using it for shooting, okay, I'm going to be identifying targets out to 1,000 yards or whatever, and I don't need to make PID on what's in that guy's hand or something like that, then I probably am not going to need that higher level of magnification. So the only time I'm usually using high powers of magnification in this role is when I'm making a shooting scope play double duty as an observation scope. Okay, let's go back and restart with just observation optics, things like – well, I'm going to break this into three parts. Spotting scopes, binos, and monoculars. Here's the easy way to select them. Spotting scopes, if I don't mind a little extra weight and I have a stable platform. Using spotting scopes without a stable platform sucks. Like a really good tripod, a good pack, you know, a good rear rest I can prop up on something. Trying to freehand a spotting scope blows, especially an angled spotting scope. It is a fucking nightmare, all right? So don't try to freehand. It's going to suck. If you're going to be freehanding observing, this is where monoculars and binos come in. Monoculars are better for this role because of how they're designed, how they're built, the more simple glass mechanisms within them. But obviously, they typically have smaller objectives, and you're usually not going to be able to have any varied magnification. So it's going to be 8 power fix, 10 power fix, 15 power fix, something like that. Binos are really my go-to for field observation unless I need to have something small and handy. Like even when we go on vacation, I take our Vortex monoculars. We've got an 8 power and a 15 power. I take it so that we can see shit far away. It doesn't matter where we go. If we're like, what is that? I'd like to be able to see it. I keep a little 8 power monocular in my truck because sometimes I'm driving along the road and I'm like, what the fuck is that? And I also think of it from an emergency perspective of if I have to ditch my vehicle for any variety of reasons, I'd like to see what's going on over there. Because if I'm on foot, either A, by myself, or B, with my family in tow, I want to avoid trouble at all fucking costs. So I'd like to be able to magnify whatever the fuck that is over there by 8 times so I can see what the hell is going on. And in both those monoculars that we use, I do have mil reticles in them so that I can range and identify things appropriately. So monoculars are nice for that perspective. However, to really reduce overall eye fatigue, I'm a huge fan of a set of binos. For binos, I don't like to go over about 10 or 12 power. 10 power is kind of optimal for me. And these days with a lot of the technology, I mean, I got a set of the new Furies from Vortex. I've had a set of the Fury rangefinders. The new one has the Applied Ballistics app built into it. So literally the binos can take my pressure, my temperature. They can plot my shooting solution. They can give me my distance. And they can Bluetooth to my Kestrel or my other weather station if I just want to go totally fucking insane with it. So it's like the technology is out there if you really want to play with those things. But I like a good set of binos. If I was going to pick one optic and say I got to go into the end of the world with this optic, it's going to be a 10 power pair of binos with a rangefinder built in. Like that's going to be my go-to optic. Given opportunities to do other things and be more specific and more contextual, yeah, I'll choose spotting scopes for when I'm static on a tripod spotting for somebody. I'll choose a monocular when I'm kind of out and about moving. I'm going to be passing it to other people. Binos are a lot harder to adjust. A monocular, go here, put this up to your eyeball and then adjust the focus so it's clear. But when you start fucking with binos, you have to, technically you're supposed to adjust each individual diopter to your eyeballs and then you have the focus ring. You have to bend them in and out to make them fit your face. You hand a set of expensive binos to somebody. They're fucking with your shit. They're moving your diopter. Oh, let me focus these. I'm like, no, motherfucker, that took me 20 minutes to get. Oh, thanks. Yeah, fucking just go ahead and fuck my shit up. So I don't like handing my binos to anybody else. Drew's got her own pair of binos. I have my own pair of binos. Our eyeballs are different. I don't want to have to be fucking with my diopter every single time I hand Drew or she hands her, me hers or whatever. So just something to consider looking at, overall optics for that. Should I get a reticle within these optics? Yes, if given the opportunity, a reticle or a rangefinder built in would be badass. I'm using a reticle if I'm going to be spotting for shooting. I don't want a reticle necessarily built into binos unless I'm going to be using them to spot for shooting. If I'm not going to be using them to spot for shooting, I don't find any particular use in that if I can have a rangefinder built in instead. The reason I like to have the nil reticles built into the spotting scope is because I'm using them to spot for shooters most of the time. And if in the monoculars, because if I could build one of those things with a rangefinder built in, I'd rather have that. I like the reticle in the spotting scope because I'm making shooting corrections. I want the reticle in the monocular because I'm trying to range and distance things. So slightly different application. There is choices for both all of those things to be in mil or minute. So choose the appropriate setup. Second focal plane or first focal plane, make sure that you choose the appropriate one. Like my spotting scope from Vortex, my bitch about it is the eyepiece that has a reticle built in is not first focal plane, and it's a fixed 22 power. Mm-hmm. So whether like it or not, it's fucking fixed 22 power. The Leupold Mark IV series I like more actually because it's a first focal plane reticle, and so I can zoom in and out, and the reticle adjusts sizes. So I don't always want to be at 22 power. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I want to be higher. Sometimes I want to be lower. But when I'm running my Razor, I don't have a choice. It is what it is. So do consider that. You're probably not going to have many choices on reticles. Very few times. It's usually just you want it in mils or minutes. The reticles are what they are. I don't know why reticled spotting scopes are not more popular. I really don't.
I think they help by being able to adjust and call better wind calls so you can do the math pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. It gives you that toolbar where you can measure things pretty easily.
Oh, it's a measuring stick, right?
Yeah. I don't understand why people don't use them more.
I think it's just because of their limited application. Like I see some really high-end guys that I like using like Bushnell Elites because they're a relatively inexpensive option that has a fucking reticle built in.
Yeah.
There's like that, the Vortex, the Leupold, the Swarovskis. I mean, there's not really that many options. And don't ever look through, I think it's the 8500 series
Swarovskis. Oh, I remember this story.
They have a binocular mount for their spotting scope, so you can look with two eyes and reduce your eye fatigue. The reticle can be turned on and off. It's front focal plane, and it's illuminated. I was at a shooting event. Ruger had brought me in to do a whole bunch of of teaching on their new at the time new 6mm Creedmoor in the Ruger Precision Rifle. I was doing a big class. They was help, you know, optics for all the rifles and spotting scopes or everything for Swarovski. Swarovski guy shows up. He's like, "Hey man, why are you using your Vortex spotting scope? I really want you to use this Swarovski." And I'm like, "No." And he's like, "Look man, if you're going to be doing this with us, I really need you to use Swarovski." And I go, "No." He's like, "Why don't you want to use it?" I go, "Because I don't want to fucking buy it." And he's like, "Why?" And I'm like, "Because it's like $6,000 or some bullshit." You know, he's like, "Oh, I'll give you a good deal on one." I'm like, "What's your good deal is still more than I have in this entire fucking setup I have right here." So anyway, in the end, the sad part of the story is I did look through it. It's fucking incredible. And I do want one, but not today. Little out of my price range. But definitely, you know, can still consider the don't over magnify consideration here for your spotting scopes. You may not need, you know, like I have a little Razor 11-33 from Vortex. It's one of my favorite spotting scopes. There's no reticle built into it, unfortunately. I wish there was, but it's an awesome freaking spotting scope. Super lightweight. I would actually take this thing hunting with me, and it's 11-33, and it's more than I need most of the time. So don't think, "Oh man, I want a good spotting scope. I got to get an 85mm lens. I need to get, you know, 65 power magnification." Like, you might not need that. So just consider what are you looking at? What are you trying to do? Are you trying to identify something at 1,000 yards and you need to see what's in their hands? Okay, you need a lot of magnification. Are you just trying to see a target or a deer or whatever at, you know, 600, 800, 1,000, 200 yards, whatever? Like, okay, you probably don't really need that much magnification if you're just IDing steel targets or something like that. So consider what's the real world context and don't get all fantastical. But in the apocalypse, dude, if it comes to that, okay, it's good to buy for that kind of shit, but don't waste your money on that. Buy more ammo instead. And I know some people are thinking it, what about straight versus angled eyepieces? I prefer angled eyepieces, but I'm also looking in spotting scopes through usually mounted to a tripod, and I'm generally not looking at them from directly behind the spotting scope. So if I was going to be spotting for someone laying next to them, you know, on a rooftop kind of thing, for example, I would want a straight lens or a straight eyepiece because I want to be able to get low. An angle, I have to be above the optic, and it's not as ideal, all right? But, you know, again, consider context of what you're going to be doing real world. One thing here we got to talk about because it's important is tripods. You know, what am I going to mount this thing to? If I'm mounting spotting scopes to – or I'm sorry, shooting scopes to rifles, the best mount you can buy. Just like you're putting good money into optic, put good money into your mounts. Get a kick-ass mount. I'm a huge fan of American Defense mounts. I also like the Vortex Precision Matched Rings. Big fan of those. Warn, Burris, Delta, X Delta, Delta Zero, they make some good shit. Fuck, I can't even think of them all right now off the top of my head. Lots of great mounts out there. Great. Get those. They're perfectly fucking fine. I use ADM or American Defense mounts when I can because I really, really like their stuff. But buy the most optic or the most mount you can when you're mounting your optic to your gun. If you're just looking at tripods, binos, etc., highly, highly recommend Leo Photo for your tripods or Tuvet arms. Either one of those, you're going to be happy with the tripod. You want to blow money, really write stuff. That's some of the best tripod and tripod accessories on the market.
Doesn't Vortex use Leo Photo?
Yes, the Vortex Radiant is a Leo Photo.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Leo Photo, L-E-O-F-O-T-O, phenomenal tripods. Get fat legs and tall tripods. Always get taller than you and always get the big fat. I think they're like 40mm legs or something like that. Get the fat legs, get carbon fiber, get something that's, you know, 6-7 feet tall, whatever it needs to be. You want that height in case you're at an angle or you're shooting in a weird position or you need to use it for rear support or whatever it may be. So definitely get solid tripods. Awesome tripod accessories. I prefer Fehu Outdoors, F-E-H-U. Outdoors, Fehu Outdoors. They make the chaps, they make the bags, they make the covers, they make slings, they make cases, they make everything you need for your freaking tripod, all right? So Fehu Outdoors, awesome, awesome, awesome stuff. I use them literally on all of our tripods and even for other stuff. Their ammo bags, I use all kinds of their stuff. One of their packs, they make great gear. So ultimately, the choice you're trying to make here is, are we using it for shooting or are we using it for observation or am I trying to combine the two? If I had to walk out there today and buy an optic for my rifle and a optic for observation, and it was that was it, man. Right? This is like video game. You find the store in the town and you only get to buy this and then you have to go out into the wilds and defend yourself against all the enemies. I would get for an optic, I would probably get – oh, man, this would be a hard choice, honestly. But I would say either a Vortex Razor Gen 2, and the only reason I'm going to pick that is because of locking turrets. If the damn Viper Gen 2s would just put fucking locking turrets, then I would take the Viper Gen 2 over the Razor, hands down, no questions asked. But – I like the Razor, a little more durable, it's a little heavier, but those locking turrets are worth it, man. When I'm out in the wilds, I have had my turret spin. I like locking turrets. In that same vein of locking turrets, hard to beat the old Leupold Mark series with their return to zero pop-out turrets. So, you know, it'd be a toss-up. I think right now I'd probably go with the Vortex just because of the price difference. Mm-hmm. But awesome capability there. If I was going to use, okay, I can only buy this one observation optic and that's it, I'm getting a set of the Furies 10 power with the built-in rangefinder in them. That, and then I can happily go out in the world. This setup is what I use for competition. It's what I use for hunting. Like, I love it. So there you go. If I had to pick, that's what I would choose. So if you think we missed something or you think we're totally off, there's one more thing I want to talk about. Reticle thickness. Sorry. Am I trying to be precise and slow, thin reticles? Am I trying to be fast and precision isn't as important? Thick reticle. Eyesight considerations like Drew was talking about.
Yeah.
All these thin little lines and little numbers and little hash marks are badass in a reticle. Unless you can't fucking see them, go to one of the big box stores, Cabela's, Bass Pro, whatever, look through the optics. Get behind your buddy's rifle, whatever you got to do, look through the optics and make sure it's going to be happy with your eye. I don't care if it's $200 or $2,000 or $4,000 you're going to spend on an optic. The last thing you want is to get an optic and be disappointed. All right, if you think we totally missed something or there's a question that we didn't answer, please hit us up and ask us. info@trainingaz.com is the email address. You can always get a hold of us at. Excuse me. Independence training moment. What did Drew and Glenn do this past week to better prepare any of the four zones for an emergency? Excuse me. Got a dry throat today.
I think it's the allergies from all the storms.
Could be. Yeah, storms are really stirring shit up around here.
Yeah, I've been a little allergy lately.
Drew and I had an opportunity to take a shooting class together as students. And that actually doesn't
happen.
Really happen. I mean, ever. We're in training together all the time, teaching, or we're in training all the time together. She's a student, or we're taking instructor level classes or whatever. But just to be students in a training class, we got the opportunity to train together in a 2-day rifle class and really work on our shooter spotter communication. You know, work on how that works, which is a lot of fun. Basically, it's just Drew cursing at me.
this is true.
And telling me I'm wrong, even though
no,
I'm not.
No,
wrong.
No, I don't think I said
that. But wrong. Yeah, there's some of that. But no, it really was fun just to help improve our communication, improve our overall capability of working together, shooting together, her understanding my equipment, me understanding hers better. Awesome opportunity. Took the rifle class from the guys over at Apex, Damien and Austin and Anthony. Great dudes. Really, really nice guys. Good class. Good class. For the context of the class, it was a good class. And it also was just a good reminder of, like, always look at the context of where people are drawing their information from and how they're trying to apply it to you. You know, I can see frustration. Sometimes people are like, oh, yeah, but I wish they'd do more of this. And I'm like, yeah, but that's not what you signed up for. That's not what this class is about. So that's why you're not getting that, you know. But it was a good time. One thing I can definitely say about these guys is they really have a good – presence as far as being engaged with the students. You know, it wasn't like there was no egos involved, even though they all had very impressive resumes. You know, there was There was no ego involved. There was nobody like, I'm better than you. I never got that sense. Yeah. And so I really did enjoy training with them just for that reason. It's kind of fun to just hang out with some cool guys, glean a little bit of information, have an eyeball look at me. I don't get that so much. You know, I spend 20 plus days a month teaching other people. It's nice to have an eyeball look at me and say, hey, man.
You are special.
Consider this. Not that, but like, consider this. Or, hey, man, what about your body position? Or, you know, hey, dude, why do you do it like that? Or, you know, have you thought about it? Sometimes I'm like, I don't really think about why I fucking do that. And now that you bring it up, I don't fucking know. You know, it's just a thing I do. So it was nice. Remember, you can bring us out. Oh, sorry. Independence Training Moment brought to you by IndependenceTraining.com or TrainingAZ.com. Remember our alumni event this Wednesday, guys, 6 to 9 at Dad's Eatery in Scottsdale. You can bring us out to train with you. Get hosting information via email info@TrainingAZ.com. Make sure that if you are even thinking about it, send us an email. We'll send you the details. So easy to host us, and you get a train for free. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram as The Arms Room Show, Independence Training, MRC Phoenix, Redwire Gear, and PMA or Precision Martial Arts Scottsdale. We're proud members of the Heroes Media Group. Really appreciate all the wonderful things that the network does for us and that they do with us. And if you guys haven't ever looked them up, please do. Just they're on Instagram. They're on all the social media things. Go look them up, Heroes Media Group. Next week, we're going to be talking about how it's not just one event. Becoming well-rounded in your preparedness is critical. Don't just prepare for one thing. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.